Hello, my name is Brian Novoshelsky, and welcome to the Over the Counter Podcast. Today we're joined by Tom DePietro, practicing pharmacist and owner of DePietro's Pharmacy in Scranton, Pennsylvania, and current member of the Drug Topics Editorial Advisory Board. Welcome and thank you so much for joining me today, Tom.
Yeah, it's a pleasure to join you, and I always look forward to talk to you and be involved in the Drug Topics family.
Awesome, really appreciate that. So today we're really going to be discussing just general developments in community pharmacy and its current state from the perspective of an independent pharmacy owner. So we'll really be kind of running the gamut, touching on a lot of different topics, exploring a variety of topics from PBM reform and AI in pharmacy to workforce burnout and continued challenges in pharmacy reimbursement. So Tom, to start us off today, kind of want to start off with the big one, in my opinion. I'm sure you would agree. The PBM reform that passed in February was a long time coming. From your perspective as an owner, has it moved, or do you think it will move the needle at all, or does it kind of feel like more of the same with a new coat of paint?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. And I think for us to see any meaningful change, we have to start somewhere, right? So for the past 14 years, as I own this pharmacy and I'm advocating for change, nothing really seemed to move that had much of an impact. And if it did move, maybe it was the state and maybe it's not enforced. So I think to see the federal government make a meaningful attempt to pass legislation is a good thing for pharmacy. So although it might not help us today, the conversation about PBM reform is much louder. It's happening across essentially every single state. I think as an independent pharmacy owner, we have some great momentum for reform to happen. It's just a matter of how quick could reform come for those that are barely hanging on. Last week I spoke with at least three pharmacy owners in my area that had called and said, like, "Hey, would you be interested in taking a look at the business? I'm looking to get out." And, unfortunately for them, reform can't come quick enough. But I think meaningful reform on a federal level being passed is something that I was like hoping and praying for. So you can't dismiss the fact that it was a good outcome. More to come because the legislation, won't take effect until 2028. So the fact that we're having a discussion about legislation being passed is a positive.
Awesome. Yeah, very much agree. There's definitely multiple sides of it. Even if it doesn't enforce all this sweeping change immediately, a
Right.
domino effect kind of, that's kind of what I see as like a domino effect. And it's definitely a big movement. But it, like you said, it can't, sometimes it can't come fast enough. So that's kind of a great transition into my next question. So despite the reform, independent and retail pharmacies have continued to shut their doors. Like you pretty much just said, real world experiences talking to pharmacy owners. How are these closures reshaping the patient load and expectations at pharmacies like yours that are still standing?
Yeah, I feel bad for the patients because they're either coming to one of the independents that are around that are left in their community, going to a big box store. Maybe they have a regional supermarket that they could patronize. I do my grocery shopping at one of them, and I could tell that that pharmacy is just not equipped for the volume they're handling. It's a small grocery pharmacy. Generally, when I'm popping in to just grab groceries, there's at least 12 people in line, and there's one cashier and there's one pharmacist and one technician. They were built for more of a convenience, not a volume business. So I think longer wait times, probably not as much personal service that they're accustomed to. So those are the challenges. I mean, we grew strategically. Like, we didn't take every single customer because I knew our differentiator at my pharmacy is service. So we kind of had to put up a wall, like a wait list, so to speak. And early on, when the Rite Aids closed, we took on new customers, but we took them on tactically because in this business, you can't grow too quick because you're going to outrun your cash because you have to order the drug, fill all the prescriptions, wait 30 days for the reimbursement to come. Oh, by the way, it's a wash, essentially. You filled the prescription, you made $3 or you lost $10. So, to not strategically take a patient is, I think, where some pharmacies got in trouble. But it's hard to not help people who are looking for your help. So it's counterintuitive to what most pharmacies came into this profession for. So it's just a sad circumstance. I think, unfortunately, a population went to mail order, and they come in here and they're like, "Tom, the mail never it never came. Could I get 7 days? Call the insurance, get an override, give them the 7 days worth of medicine." 2 months, 3 months later, they're back in the store. So like, is that healthcare? Are we really helping the person or not? And, you know, I think that's the unfortunate, you know, the people have to get their prescriptions somewhere. You know, it's not like they're just casually getting takeout tonight. Like if they're sick, they need their medicine, you know, and the more barriers that you put in the way, the less likely they are to take the medication, the less likely are they are to have a better outcome. And then what happens? We're spending more money as a healthcare industry. So it is an unfortunate situation.
No, yeah, that I think that was perfectly said. I think it really contextualizes, you know, where pharmacy is going right now with the mail orders, the digital pharmacies, just the convenience of, you know, grocers and things like that. But those pharmacies aren't going to match up to, you know, pharmacies like yours that are really focusing on those patient interactions, driving outcomes, and even the value-based kind of initiatives going on. There's so much going on that contextualizes, you know, like how different pharmacy can be right now. And
yeah, and you know, I make a point to say this anytime I have the opportunity, because I was a chain pharmacist at one point, and there are great pharmacists working there. There's great technicians working there. Not everybody needs an independent pharmacy. I have a lot of friends that might be on one medication. They want to stop, grab a thing of milk and head home for the day on their closest pharmacy to their house. That's fine. It's convenient. That's generally the driving force of how you choose a pharmacy, right? We serve as patients who need a pharmacist. My friends just need a pharmacy. Our customers need a pharmacist. They need advice. They need to know what insurance to sign up for. How do I organize my medication? What vaccine am I due for? Did I have my shingles shot? You know, what happens if this drug doesn't get approved? Is there an alternative? So we're dealing with a little bit more of a complex patient that needs us to walk alongside them. And my fear is they're not getting that elsewhere. And I don't want to generalize it. So I'll just, with a caveat, saying, obviously, it's not exclusive to us. But, you know, if you look at communities across the country, maybe 70% of these people don't have access to a pharmacist. You know, they do have access to a pharmacy, a mail order pharmacy, but they don't have access to a pharmacist. And that's the differentiator that I always like to point out, because I think it's important to talk about.
Yeah, I think that was perfectly said. I think it's exactly why, you know, we're having you on. We love to collaborate kind of with someone who's really boots on the ground and understanding all different facets of pharmacy right now. So yeah. Awesome. So kind of wanted to move into kind of that volume piece that you had touched on in your first response. But with more volume flowing into fewer pharmacies, what are you hearing from your staff and peers, or kind of people outside just in the general pharmacy community, about burnout? And do you think that the industry is actually taking it seriously?
You know, I don't think we could look at it as an industry as a whole to say, is the industry taking it seriously? I think it's incumbent upon each organization to say, are we going to prioritize, you know, not only the outcome of the patient, but are we going to prioritize our employees' well-being, right? And I would often say it's regional. I mean, you may have a great district manager at one area and one that's more driven by business in another region. So, you know, I think there's been some unfortunate stories in the news the past 6 to 8 months about pharmacists and about the impact of mental health and, unfortunately, suicide. And I don't say that to hyper-focus on the issue, but it's real. You know, statistics show that pharmacists are more likely to commit suicide than another profession. And I mean, we can't ignore that, right? We have to talk about that. It comes with increased volume. You know, when you look at de-escalation strategies, like, that's not something we learn about in pharmacy school. That's not something that's trained by an employer. I think we have to evolve as a profession to say, what could we do to better support our staff? Hey, maybe we never even discussed de-escalation strategies and we should have a CE on it. So I think we all have to, we can't expect somebody else to solve this problem of mental health. We all have to play a part of it. And, you know, I look at each pharmacist, or whether you're a staff pharmacist or a pharmacy manager. I mean, if you're not advocating for your technicians, we all know what happens. They quit, and then the store becomes even worse, because now you're operating with one less technician. You can't fill the spot quick enough. And then there's more stress on the staff. So there's a real downstream effect if just one of your employees is in a rut. And I think that's important to recognize and understand that it will impact customer service and it will impact the experience for all of your customers.
Awesome. Yeah, perfectly said. I appreciate you kind of adding the nuance to a struggling pharmacy workforce. But, you know, I think it also highlights the kind of the fact that pharmacists nowadays are like becoming the everyman and addressing their own mental health, other, you know, all this volume and patience and all of that kind of coming together as one. So I appreciate that. Kind of wanted to, like I said, we're definitely jumping around a lot here, but kind of wanted to talk about something that's a little more developing and newsy right now. So the Inflation Reduction Act, obviously big implementation at the start of this year. It changed drug pricing in ways that a lot of patients, and not just patients, have been celebrating, but owners are quietly feeling the squeeze. Can you explain how the IRA cash flow crunch affected your business's bottom line?
Yeah, I mean, luckily we were prepared for the cash flow crunch. When we had the DIR cliff the prior year, we had set aside some money that luckily we didn't have to use. So I ended up positioning that money kind of on a standby for the Inflation Reduction Act. Now, I was lucky to have the money, right? Not many owners were. So strategically, I was able to back in to an amount of money that I needed to keep me comfortable. But when you look at what it did, you also have to look at the population. You know, you might have a store that's very heavily Medicare population, or you might have one that's not, right? So most of us have a lot of Medicare patients. And what did that do? That tied up a lot of cash and dragged it out. What I will say, and I do want to recognize and appreciate the fact that I had doubts, many, many doubts that the entire system, the interchange of information was not going to flow. Surprisingly, I am surprised to see how it is working, albeit maybe a little bit slower than we wanted it to, but the accuracy of the claims data, at least for my store, has been impressive. Impressive to the point that I think this data, this exchange of data, this exchange of real-time drug pricing between pharmacy, manufacturer, insurance company, I wouldn't be surprised if we see some sort of reform being built upon this type of infrastructure system of exchanging the information. I don't know what that looks like, but I have a feeling in 5 to 10 years, you're going to see that type of interchange expanded upon.
Awesome. Yeah. And definitely, I mean, you're kind of one example of one store that's kind of thinking about that, has that in the back of your mind. But at the same time, you know, organizations like NCPA, NCPDP, they're definitely like kind of looking into this and kind of trying to make it easy for pharmacists going forward. But it's nice to hear that it's working to some capacity. Awesome. So kind of wanted to get away from like kind of the dreariness of some things going on in pharmacy, but to another, I mean, this could also be dreary in some respects, but it's also, you know, the future. So there's a lot of buzz around AI in pharmacy and healthcare right now, from verification tools to automation and so much more, really. What are you actually seeing being adopted in the real world for pharmacy practice? And what do you think is like hype versus genuine help in the AI space?
Yeah. And you know, there's so many vendors that approach us on a daily basis as a pharmacy owner. So not only are we dealing with our day-to-day operations, dealing with our customers, you know, meeting with the employees, but then you have a ton of vendors reaching out, and AI is certainly a big buzz for us. You know, I did a couple of demos and I just thought to myself that there's got to be a way to implement AI in a quick manner. We deployed 3 bots that are completing data entry for us, and they work 24/7. The efficiencies that we have picked up internally to essentially gain 3 data entry technicians that are working for me 24/7 has really sped up our operations. I'll share that I purchased like 42 feet of will call bin area that I thought we would grow into. But because we're processing and filling prescriptions so efficiently with the bots, we filled that 42 feet within a week. So we're really like hot wiring the operations, because if you look at a pharmacy, every single pharmacy, regardless of the size, Brian, has to block and tackle, right? They need to type prescriptions, whether you're filling 100 prescriptions a day, 500 or 1,000. And then the other thing that I say to stores is, or owners really, it's usually your most talented technician that's doing the data entry. Unfortunately, I talk to so many pharmacy owners that are completing data entry on at home on the weekends, you know, before they head to the store to get the queue cleaned up. And I mean, you can understand why some owners may not be quick to adapt it, and there is a lot of noise in the space. But, you know, from an ROI perspective, I don't care if you're filling 100 prescriptions a day or 1,000. I know you need to type prescriptions, and I know you're using someone that's valuable doing it. There's an opportunity there to stop. There's a lot, I'm hearing other noise, not noise, because I've spoken to stores that are doing it, but it's how quick could you implement it into your workflow while addressing all of those other things that I mentioned earlier. I did some calls with some voice agents who would help, you know, triage phone calls, workflow, you know, so the like high level ideas. You hear the high level idea, the shiny object, but what I would encourage every pharmacy to do, data entry. It's a no-brainer. It's easy to adapt. It's easy to implement. And I know you're typing prescriptions, because if you're not typing prescriptions, you're out of business.
Yeah, that's perfectly said. There's definitely like a conversation to be had about like the old school and new school and kind of where technology falls in between. But at the end of the day, if it's easy to implement and it's going to like really efficiently kind of help run the business, or at least one small part of it, like, it's great to hear. And it sounds super successful kind of in that fashion, regardless of all the, you know, challenges, risks that have been kind of associated with. It's going to be a long game as this kind of just rolls out more and more in the future. Awesome. So yeah, I think this is a really great conversation. I appreciate you rolling with all the different topics that I think we could have a single podcast on all of the topics that we discussed today,
right.
But kind of just wanted to close it out in the kind of just addressing pharmacy in general. In the middle of all the current disruption, you know, closures, reform, burnout, new tech, everything, is there an argument that independent pharmacy is actually better positioned than it was a few years ago? Or do you think that the pressure is really compounding?
You know, I just turned 42. I've owned the store. I opened my pharmacy 14 years ago, and I've you know, often felt defeated. But with all of this noise and with all of this momentum, there's one thing that has to be said, is that independent pharmacy overcomes challenges, full stop. You threw a global pandemic at us. What did we do? We rolled up our sleeves. We deployed into our communities. We vaccinated thousands upon thousands of people. We came back to our stores and we said, now what could we do? I can't think of many industries that could adapt to the headwinds that we as pharmacy owners face. And there's something to be said about that. So, you know, continue to reimburse me poorly, but I will overcome it and I'll beat you. And you know, that's where I think you have to have the stamina. And if you're older, I could understand why it's easy to not have that stamina. But I think as an industry and as a whole, there's not many professions that could take the punches on the chin like independent pharmacies do. And we get right back up, smile, and serve our customers to the point they love us. You know, there's something to be said about that. But it's time for our legislators to understand the importance of us in the community. Because if we're not here, I keep telling our state, you're going to be paying me in 10 years to open a pharmacy by giving me grant money. We're not looking for more money to be shifted to us. We're just looking for a bigger cut of the pie that's being stolen. But yeah, I'm confident that there's better days ahead of independent pharmacists. It's just, could your operation outlast the storm?
Awesome. I think that's a great way to cap this off. For me, it's kind of a full circle moment. You were one of the first people that I interviewed coming here with drug topics, and, you know, seeing how much from your perspective, but also just in pharmacy in general, how much has changed in the past few years. And despite all the challenges and risks that are, some of them are kind of inevitable, it's great to see where pharmacy has come, where it's going. And, you know, we're so excited to just see what happens. So I really appreciate you joining us today and kind of touching on various topics, and it's great to see your perspective on it.
Thank you for having me.
Awesome. Thanks, Tom.